Hey everyone, Steve Adubato. This is Lessons in Leadership, my colleague Mary Gamba. Mary, we kick off the program with a first-time guest. It will not be his last. Christopher D. Marr, who is chairman and chief executive officer of a great bank down in the, I was going to say southern part of the state, but that's because I'm up here north, in the Jersey Shore. It's Ocean First Bank. Chris, I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be here, Steve.
You got, and there's a couple connections I want to make sure we cover. You're currently the chair of the board at Monmouth University.
That's right.
And go on our website, folks, stand-deliver.com, to check out our interview with the president at Monmouth University, Pat Lay. And also, there's a connection to our longtime partners at Hackensack Meridian Health. You serve on some boards there?
I do, yeah. I serve on the network board, and I chair the ambulatory care board. So it's a great honor to work with some of the terrific folks at Hackensack.
Yeah, check out our Bob Garrett interviews. And also, your wife, Maria, very involved down at Riverview as well.
That's right, Riverview and the Count Basie, active on both those boards.
We love Count Basie. Great stuff. Now that we got that covered, hey, listen, describe the footprint of Ocean First Bank, please, Chris.
You know, well, it's interesting, Steve. You know, we started way back in 1902. We're a creation of Point Pleasant, New Jersey, right? So us and Jersey Mike's. We've both grown a lot. We now cover five states. So our footprint runs from Boston through D.C. The bulk of our business runs between New York, New Jersey, and Philadelphia. But we're in the process of an acquisition now that will substantially expand our footprint in New York and bring us throughout all five boroughs, but also out in Nassau and Suffolk County.
Let me ask you this. And by the way, go on the website to find out more about Ocean First Bank. Chris, help us understand this. And Bob Garrett knows this. We've been doing a leadership academy there, a physician leadership academy, for a decade. We talked about Pat Lay, his leadership journey, your leadership journey. Was it your longtime goal professionally to be the CEO of a bank?
Well, you know, Steve, I always had kind of somewhere on my chart that I would have loved the opportunity to become the CEO of a bank. I don't know that I would have given myself great odds early on, but it was a career objective. There were a lot of guys I worked with that I had a tremendous amount of respect for, and it was probably an aspiration. It was certainly not an expectation.
One more before Mary jumps in here. I'm going to do it, Mary. The number one question that I ask every great leader: what do you see in 2026, particularly in the financial services industry, Chris, the number one leadership challenge you and your team at Ocean First face right now would be?
You know, I think, look, we live in a world where there's a tremendous amount of change. You know, news cycles are very short. There's a lot of opportunity for distraction for all the right reasons. And you could kind of say, well, you know, the movements in technology, the geopolitical events, where interest rates are. And I think the biggest challenge we have this year is not unlike the challenge we've had in other years, which is to kind of stick to your business and understand that all that stuff, while it's important in the short term, it should never be your focus. Your focus should be on your clients. Your focus should be on your business. And if you were running your business properly and carefully and thoughtfully, you're going to weather the ups and downs. And you know, this time last year, we were talking about tariffs being the kind of all-consuming conversation. And we've kind of navigated through that. And I certainly hope this time next year we have a different conversation as well.
One challenge after another. Mary?
Great. And Steve, I want to make sure you could see me okay.
Yes.
Perfect. Great. Sorry, we're doing this in real time, and I just had an alert come up on my computer. So, Chris,
Mary,
you talked
a
lot
of— in real time take people behind the—
I did. So I just wanted to make sure that you were seeing me okay.
Yes,
before we continue.
Better than ever. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. So, Chris, I did want to pick your brain a little bit. You talked about expanding. You talked about growing your footprint. How do you maintain a culture within Ocean First Bank where it is truly customer focused, even with that growth? Because I know the challenge of having to grow. You have everybody in their— potentially could have people in their silos. Talk about creating that DNA in your team to make sure that everybody is working together and rowing the boat in the same direction.
It's a great question, one that we get often, because you know, if you have a special sauce, you want to make sure you keep that special sauce. And it's interesting. The first thing I usually start with when we talk about this internally is that culture is not a static thing. So if we believe that we have, you know, somehow achieved the perfect culture and it's not going to change and we're just going to roll that culture over different geographies and events and people, it's probably not going to fit well, right? It's not going to fit well everywhere. So the culture has to evolve. And we've gone through, we were just a couple billion dollars a number of years ago. We'll probably be over $20 billion of assets as we complete this last transaction. So all along, we allowed the culture to appropriately adapt as we brought new people in. So the culture should change from time to time. The principle should not. So your focus on the client, your focus on doing what's right, kind of the care we take and the decisions we make around having a very conservative and kind of fortress balance sheet. But we're gonna get there in a different way in Baltimore than we might in Cape May, and another different way, say, in Brooklyn or Queens or Manhattan. So we have to be sensitive, and we have to be a place that allows local leadership the opportunity to make their own decisions, to present the bank in the best way in their markets, while also holding the principles firm. So the culture is important, doesn't change overnight, but it should evolve. And if it doesn't evolve, I think your organization will eventually, face some deeper challenges.
Well said. Chris, I want to follow up on this. I was watching a Monmouth University basketball game, and the arena where Monmouth University plays basketball is the OceanFirst Arena, correct?
That's right.
So here's the thing I was thinking, and I before we were doing the interview and obviously doing our due diligence and researching, I said, "Oh yeah, OceanFirst, we know them. That's the name of the arena there where Monmouth University plays. They're a bank in that area, Ocean Monmouth County." And I thought I knew what your footprint was. And there's a point to this, trust me. The branding question, OceanFirst, as you expand, you got the New York thing going on. You're in several different, five states.
Yes, five states, yeah.
Explain the name, the brand of OceanFirst while you're expanding.
Steve, that's one of the biggest challenges you have. You want the brand to kind of evoke in our customers and our potential customers the right messaging and image and all that. And it's very difficult because as you expand and you go to different markets, it means different things. In Washington, D.C. today, our team is largely known for its government contract banking business. So we're the bank to government contractors. Along the Jersey Shore, we're more historically known as a residential lender, a business that we don't do directly any longer. As you enter the new markets and new products, you're kind of always redefining your brand. We have a very funny conversation here about whether the name OceanFirst is a geographically linked or locked brand that wouldn't translate well as you go other places. And our constant reminder is there are some wonderful institutions. I always use the example of Fifth Third Bank, admirable bank, kind of a crazy name, but they've kind of built a reputation. So what we focus on is trying to find the opportunities to define our brand in our customers' minds by the way we execute. And look, our step into New York this year is big. We're going to be adding 30 branches in the boroughs and Long Island. You can expect that sometime in October, we're going to have to do a very significant investment in our brand. But, there are oceans everywhere, and most people like oceans, so we'll just stick with the name until we find a better one.
I got it. Mary, last question.
Yeah, and you talk about branding, Chris. I wonder how much, or if at all, artificial intelligence, technology, innovation, that's been our buzzword literally for the past 12 months and into the future. How at OceanFirst are you encouraging your team to use technology, to use artificial intelligence, to really make sure that you're connecting with those key stakeholders that you were just talking about?
That's one of the big challenges all industries face now, and especially in an industry like ours, which is so data intensive. And
That's right.
for whom security and things are so critical. I think that we have to start with understanding how our customers want to bank and delivering the best experience we can. So I'll use examples like using mobile banking, online real-time payments. We have the ability through Zelle and FedNow payments where we can move money in an instant. That raises certain security and risk issues for our customers. So you have to use the technology to enable the transactions to flow as effortlessly as possible. And by the way, we move, in excess of $10 billion every month, in and out, ACH, wires, all sorts of transactions. We need to do that with an accuracy that protects our customers' money. So you need the technology to be in the forefront for the customer. You need it in the background, watching to make sure we're protecting it against fraud. And you need the whole thing to be as efficient as possible so that our other stakeholders, like our shareholders, can benefit from a highly profitable company.
Chris Maher is chairman and chief executive officer at Ocean First Bank, taking on those challenges every day. And we appreciate you joining us on Lessons in Leadership. Chris, it will not be the last time, and all the best to you and your team.
Thanks, Steve.
This is Lessons in Leadership. That's Mary Gamba. That's most of the reason you watch every week. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Buccino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Pragramedis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, New Jersey Transit, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, New Jersey Sharing Network, Delta Dental of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, inspiring great minds to greater purpose since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ, and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media. To be joined for the first time by Saad Ethisham, who is the president and chief executive officer over at Atlantic Health, one of our longtime underwriters and healthcare partners. Good to see you, Saad.
Nice to see you, Steve. Thank you for having me.
You got it. And by the way, for those who don't know Atlantic Health, describe the organization. This is part of our series, Leaders in Healthcare. Please, Saad.
Yeah, Atlantic Health's been here for 20 plus years. Some of our hospitals you may recognize, Atlantic Health, Morristown Medical Center, Atlantic Health, Overlook Medical Center. We also have our regional hospitals in Chilton Medical Center, and then out on the western side of North Jersey, we have Hackettstown and Newton Medical Center. And we also have a partnership in Freehold with Central State Medical Center. So 24,000 employees, team members. We have six hospitals. We got about 1,000 physicians. We got 550 sites of care. We got a big, strong GME, graduate medical education program. We train about 360-odd residents each year. We got close to a couple of hundred medical students coming through. Mm-hmm. We have a partnership with Jefferson Medical School as well. So a little bit about Atlantic Health.
How did you come into and why did you come into healthcare, please?
You know, the journey for me to healthcare started really in Fort Worth, watching my grandmother go through ovarian cancer surgery. I was 13 at that time. And the way the care was delivered, my brother, older brother, we witnessed that. And we talked to the grandmother, you know, how is all this? How do you feel? And she was just kind of blown away with the personalized care and the compassion that was shown to her. And at that point, we decided, you know, this is a great profession. We want to pursue healthcare. At that point, we both wanted to be physicians. And well, one of us achieved that goal, my older brother. I went a different direction.
What's his specialty?
He's a neurointensivist. He's double boarded.
Wow. Well, thank you for his service and all the clinicians, the physicians and the nurses and all the other folks on the clinical side who make a difference every day. So let me try this with you. I'm curious about this. I often ask people who are in top level leadership positions what their most significant challenge is. And what is the most significant leadership challenge you face? And is it a healthcare related challenge or just being a leader in any industry?
You know, I'll give you my perspective. I think the biggest challenge being in this seat. You know, we've all held different leadership seats. But I mean, you sit in this seat of running an organization. I think the biggest challenge is making sure that your team knows that you care about them. You got to get that message to them. They got to feel it. The authenticity has to be there, that you care about them, you care about their well-being, and your day is consumed with how am I making their life better or am I making their life worse? I think the key success for any leader is if he or she can create an environment where people go home and they're excited to come back, especially on a Sunday. Are they dreading coming back or are they excited to come back? I think that's the challenge that is before us.
In terms of challenges, Saad, to what degree do you see artificial intelligence, AI, as a significant challenge and or a threat?
I see that as an opportunity, neither challenge nor an opportunity. To me, it's an opportunity. It's because for me, it's not about the shiny object or the new thing. It's not about the headline we're going to get that Atlantic Health is deploying AI. But no, it's not about that. We got to know what problems are we trying to solve. And so we know what problem we're trying to solve, and there's a solution that happens to be an AI solution. We need to bring that in and then embed that in our workflow. And at the end of the day, we're bullish on AI when it comes to, you know, back office functions, agentic AI. When it comes to ambient AI, which we're about to deploy, we deployed agentic AI for scheduling to reduce friction. We also want to develop AI assistants to work alongside our leaders who can do the mundane work of processing a lot of information and then just giving it to the leader who will make them scale a little bit faster and bigger and make them more available to be there in front of their team to talk to them and connect with them instead of sitting in front of a computer. So that's where I think the value of AI really is. I am cautious about using AI in making clinical decisions because you got to have a cognitive decision-making person, physician, clinician in between the patient and the technology.
Along those lines, anyone in your position, yes, there's a CFO, but ultimately you, as the CEO and president, are responsible to your board, to the folks who, you know, care about the well-being of Atlantic Health. In the end, you're responsible. And one of my favorite books is Extreme Ownership, and we own our universe, right? Everything around us. That doesn't mean we do everything. It means we own what happens. Trust me, there's a question here. In the effort to keep costs down, particularly when there are so many questions about federal funding and where money is coming from, state funding, federal funding, reimbursement, all of it, how the heck, Saad, do you keep costs down? You're laughing. Why? And still, still do the personal human touch and be as caring for patients and their families as you just described, and I know it's so important to you. How the heck?
Yeah, I'm laughing because, you know, it's easy to say, well, what's the biggest component of your expense structure? Well, salaries, wages are going to come up. They're going to be anywhere from 45% to 55%, some places 60% off your expense line item, right? Then you got supplies. So it's like, well, that's costing you a lot of money. You should be focused there. I tell you what, your front line is your bottom line. You start focusing there, you've already lost the battle, right? You need to think about how you enable your team to think differently. This is where technology also comes in, right? And part of our iteration is going to be using Lean Six Sigma in reducing waste within the organization. There's a lot of waste in most organizations. There's duplication that happens within the organization. What do I mean by that? Physician specialist comes in, cardiologist orders a test. Here's another one, specialist comes in, they order another test. Two similar tests being done, money going, you know, testing. And so that's where we're going to focus on. We're going to focus on access as well. There's a lot of, you know, can we get the patients when they want to be seen by a clinician in the clinic office, physician office in a timely manner? You're having some chest pain, your wife, you know, my wife nags me every time something happens. She's like, hey, you need to go see a doctor. I don't want to go see a doctor. But she makes me go see a doctor. So I make an appointment and I can't get in a timely fashion. Yes, I'm going somewhere else. And so we got to fix those type of things. So I think for any leader, think about what you're doing and how you're operating and focus on those things. Reduce the friction between the patients, consumers, and us. Take care of your team. If you're having to come to your team at the end of the day, and there's a lot of headlines. So I just saw a headline in our own state, in our backyard, 1,000 people, right, the other day, being going to be downsized.
Saw that.
I just think that's just a wrong direction. Atlantic Health, really proud to say during pandemic, when you saw all those headlines of workforce reductions, we did not do any of those.
None.
Wait, none, zero. We focus on our culture a lot here, and you can get a lot more done. So my goal is, you talked about AI. My goal is, so let's think about this for a second. They're working at 100% capacity right now. That's causing some burnout too, right? Can we bring technology to support our clinicians where they work at now 90% off their current capacity, not 100%, but produce 150%? I think that's possible. And when you do that, you enable a resilient workforce and you don't have to think about laying anybody off because you're getting more production out of them.
Hey, so let this not be the last conversation we have, not just about leadership and healthcare, but as things evolve, I'm also fascinated in some other topics. We have a series called Trust in Public Health. We have another one that looks at the future of physician universe and medical education. We'll have that next conversation in the near future. But Saad, I cannot thank you enough for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it. Look forward to the next conversation. Take care.
You got it. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media. All right, folks, this, Mary, people look like, wow, Adubato really has something. This is what you've been waiting for. Another Lessons in Leadership mini seminar. We're taping on the 7th of April. The world keeps changing around us. I looked at the New York Post, the paper of record when it comes to sports in the New York, New Jersey area. We don't know what's going to happen with the war, even though it's not called a war these days. United States, Iran, we don't know. President said, meet my deadline tonight or I'll blow up the whole country. This isn't political. Here's a question. For those who love President Trump and his leadership style, a lot of people say he leads with his gut. He goes with his gut. He says what he's on his mind. He doesn't filter it. It's not like all those other politicians. Not about politics.
Mm-mm.
Here's the question. Isn't it fair to say, rhetorical question, Mary, that sometimes leading with your gut is good leadership? Sometimes not going with your gut, your first instinct, and thinking through some other options may allow you to make a potentially better decision than the first one that comes to my gut. Have I screwed this up, Mary?
Not at all. This is one of those situations where it will never be black and white. There is no one right answer. Should you always lead from your gut? Should you always be a strategic thinker? It needs to be on a case-by-case basis, and the best leaders understand that. A perfect example in times to lead from your gut, and we can put up, Sylvester will put up, you should lead from your gut when you do need to make a fast decision.
Hold on. What are we going to call this?
We're calling it leading with your gut, question mark.
Yes, go ahead.
Real creative.
By the way, we did a law enforcement leadership segment, mm-hmm. split second decisions. Tell me about strategic thinking versus going with your gut. Go ahead,
yeah,
Mary.
Yeah, so you have to. If you're an ER physician, I'm a huge fan of The Pit. If you're not watching it, I highly recommend watching The Pit. I was a huge ER fan. Now I'm a huge Pit fan, Nurse Jackie, you name it. And if you're in the emergency room, operating room, you need to lead from your gut. Sure, you are strategic going into it, but if you all of a sudden have a bleed and you need to go in there and fix it, you have to trust your gut. So in that situation, leading from your gut gives you more confidence, and that's when a good time.
My only pushback, Mary, is it, and I don't know if this is a bullet point or not, isn't it leading with your gut, based on your experience and knowledge? Is that exactly the same thing as just leading with your gut, going with your first instinct?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to see a guy, you know, choking on the street and be like, okay, now I can go and just give him a trach and slice his neck open. I mean, if push came to shove, I might try that, but leading from my gut would be
a clinical thing. From a leader.
No, but I'm saying in leadership, if I'm leading from my gut, how many times do you and I say, you'll be like, I'm going to place that call. We've been waiting too long. I said, Steve, that's not a good time to lead from your gut because you're going to call that person. You could end up turning them off. You don't know what they have going on. Let's follow my gut on this one where I'll say, just let it ride a little bit longer. So that's strategically leading from your gut. So that's why I said there's a ton of overlap here. It's not black and white, but it is important to know the difference.
Hold on. And by the way, Mary, thank God that Mary does say to me, whether it's a team member or a sponsor or someone. 24-hour rule, right. But I don't believe that you're in 24 hours later leading with your gut strategically. Where's the question? Here's my question. Mm-hmm. And this is an interesting bullet point. Head, brain versus gut. Meaning there's also, listen, I'm a fan of being a strategic thinker and all that stuff and read Lessons in Leadership 2.0.
Yeah.
It's got a whole chapter on strategic thinking and leadership and all that. But here's the funny thing. I'm also not a fan, as this is a good bullet point too, Mary. I'm not a fan of paralysis by
analysis.
That's not strategic.
It's not strategic. You can get stuck into a loop where you're not, you know, up until a few years ago, I could not make a decision. If you go to a restaurant and they say you can pick any of these tables, I'm like, how do I know? Am I going to be too close to the door? You know, that, and I'm not even joking, yet I can make huge decisions. We just made the decision. We're like, hey, we're going to move. I'm like, all right, let's get going. And so the good thing is when it comes to strategic thinking, you want to make sure that it does help you to solve complex issues, but you can't use it to the point that with more simple issues, items, decisions you need to make, you can get stuck in analysis paralysis where you're just stuck in that loop and then making no decision is frankly then making a decision.
All right, last bullet on my end. And I know you told me not to think about bullets, but this is definitely a bullet. Either gut or brain, minimize your emotions. Does that make any sense?
Regardless of what way you go, your emotions, you need to keep them in check. You need to keep the personality out of it. Sure, we're all people, so you're not going to keep the people out of it, but you need to keep your emotional connection to what is happening. And then to tie it back to work, you need to do what's best for the organization and for yourself and for the team. Balancing all of that is tricky, I know.
And by the way, I got Alvin strategically and through his gut said goodbye, Scarlin, behind the cameras going like this. And I would say that's because they know we're out of time. Lessons in Leadership, Mary Gamba, Steve Adubato. See you next time. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Buccino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Pragramedis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, New Jersey Transit, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, New Jersey Sharing Network, Delta Dental of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, inspiring great minds to greater purpose since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ, and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.